This sermon has been revised. The current version is 3:20:14.
Today is September 16th, year 2007, and it's the 16th Sunday after Pentecost. We're going to continue on with what we were talking about last week about racism, evolution, which supports racism. That man evolved from a lower creatures, such as an ape, and that all creatures evolve, and it's the survival of the fittest. Whichever ones are physically stronger survive, and the weaker ones perish, and that's how things are determined. And we saw how the apostate antipopes of the Vatican II Church support this heresy. It's a teaching against the ordinary magisterium. No pope ever came out and actually declared or defined and condemned this evolution theory under pain of anathema, which is an abomination in itself. Woe to all these popes, since this Darwinian evolution has come about, that kept their trap shut and didn't bring out an infallible condemnation against it. But nevertheless, it is still an absolutely, it's an error that cannot be held, because it is against the ordinary magisterium. Because the unanimous consensus of the church fathers teach, just as the Bible teaches, that Adam came from the dust of the earth and Eve came from the rib of Adam, and all the creatures that were created just as you see them today. And then another little side note, that God also has had different creatures become extinct upon the face of the earth. Even in our lifetime, we know mankind has wiped out certain creatures that no longer exist because of overkilling them, or because of circumstances, maybe during the flood even, if the dinosaurs, as we know, were extinguished during the flood. But every creature that was created just as it was. They don't evolve. We also know that there's been also creatures, new creatures, that God created even after his original creation. But the fact is that anybody who believes in evolution is going against an ordinary magisterial teaching,
and thus is a heretic.
That was something we were talking about last week. Now, what we're going to go on to is talk about how people get into the idea about how Brother Will brought up last week, even that just relates to dogmas even. Because then they said, even if men evolve, so then so do dogmas. That means men become intellectually smarter as time goes on. They become more wise than past men. They become smarter. And therefore, past men who define dogmas, speaking for the church, even popes, could have erred, because at that time their understanding was not as enlightened as modern man. So that's the other heresy that links in with evolution. As man progresses, his understanding and wisdom gets greater, and therefore past men and truths that were taught by holy men of God in the Old Covenant era, the Old Testament era, and God's popes of the past who infallibly taught things, could have been wrong, because they didn't have a proper understanding of dogmas. Their intellects were puny compared to modern man, as their intellects grow and their wisdom gets stronger. Therefore, they get into the heresy that dogmas evolve and change their meaning. And they try to say, well, the Pope meant well back then, and the saints, they were teaching what they knew to be true, but their brains weren't that big enough, and God's grace, God wasn't giving them the amount of grace and enlightenment that modern men have. That's heresy. We call that the heresy of intellectual evolution. And this I'm going to read from my book on Catholic dogmas, and I have a whole section on that. I will advise you, everybody out there, to greatly read that book. But I'm going to read from the chapter titled Intellectual Evolutionists Equate Knowledge with Intellectual Capacity. And I'm going to start reading from that chapter. The intellectual evolutionists heretically believe that the general or overall intellectual capacity of men evolves as time progresses. That is, men in general become smarter and wiser than men of previous ages. I refer to man's intellectual capacity in general and not in specific cases. In specific cases, men's intellectual capacity varies, as one man can have a greater intellectual capacity, a higher IQ, than another. This difference in intellectual capacity is not because man's intellect evolves. From the time of Adam and Eve's original sin, mankind has the same general intellectual capacity. To defend their heresy and deceive people, the intellectual evolutionists use a false analogy by equating knowledge with intellectual capacity. Knowledge and intellectual capacity are not the same. A man can have less knowledge than another man and have the same and even greater intellectual capacity, a higher IQ. For example, even though a brain surgeon is very knowledgeable in his field of work, he could be totally unknowledgeable in another field of work, such as car mechanics, and hence not know the difference between a carburetor and a spark plug. Yet who would dare say that because this brain surgeon lacks the knowledge of cars, his intellectual capacity is less than the intellectual capacity of a car mechanic. In this example, we see that intellectual capacity and knowledge are not the same thing. Pointing to the scientific progress in the history of mankind, the intellectual evolutionists attempt to deceive people by teaching that scientific progress occurs because mankind's intellectual capacity evolves. That is, mankind's knowledge of things increases as time progresses because mankind's intellectual capacity evolves as time progresses. To believe this lie, people must believe that knowledge and intellectual capacity are the same. Scientific progress occurs not because mankind's intellectual capacity evolves, but because one piece of knowledge builds upon another, and thus mankind's knowledge of things increases. At each stage of knowledge, man applies the same intellectual capacity to discover what is before him. Once he makes a new discovery and hence acquires new knowledge, the next man applies the same intellectual capacity to discover what is before him in light of this new knowledge. For instance, a man cannot discover gunpowder until he has knowledge of its ingredients, sulfur, potassium nitrate, and charcoal. To make gunpowder, man must apply his intellect to come to the knowledge of these ingredients and then come to the knowledge of how to mix them correctly. At each stage, man uses the same intellectual capacity to advance to the next stage. Therefore, mankind's knowledge of things increases, but not mankind's intellectual capacity. For example, if a man could go back in time to a period when gunpowder was unknown and teach these ancient men how to make gunpowder, these ancient men would instantly have the knowledge of gunpowder and go about making and using it. Hence, the deficiency in these ancient men was not the lack of intellectual capacity, but the lack of knowledge. This is another proof that from the time of Adam and Eve's original sin, men in all generations possessed the same general intellectual capacity. There are people living today in the 21st century who are ignorant of the many scientific advances. Their lack of knowledge is not due to lack of intellectual capacity. People living in the 21st century who are ignorant of gunpowder can come to this knowledge and learn how to make and use it if someone teaches them. Hence again, knowledge and intellectual capacity are not the same. What then is the cause of man's ignorance, his lack of knowledge? There are three reasons: sin, simplicity, or non-necessity. This last reason, non-necessity, is common among all people because there are many things people do not need to know. Now we're going to first talk about lack of knowledge because of sin. A lack of knowledge is sinful when it causes squalor. Squalor does not mean poverty. A poor man can be holy or unholy, just as a rich man can be holy or unholy. The word squalor, as used here, is always caused by sin. It is a wretched, barbaric, unsanitary, immoral, and very undignified lifestyle. This is the case with savages who are cursed by God because of remaining abominable mortal sins against him. This curse manifests itself in the squalor in which they live. Their ignorance is not due to lack of intellectual capacity, but due to laziness and slothfulness. Speaking of this curse, St. Paul says that the blindness of the heart and not of the intellect is the cause of their ignorance. He says, their understanding is darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them because of the blindness of their hearts. Ephesians 4:18. Blindness of the heart means they lack the will, but not the mind, not the intellect, to learn. It is the heart that wills and the mind, the intellect that learns. As a result of their many and abominable sins, their hearts become darkened, and hence they become lazy and slothful and do not want to learn. The defect then is in their will and not their intellect. The reason they are ignorant is because they do not want to learn and not because they cannot learn. To the carnal man who does not know the ways of the true God, these ignorant savages seem intellectually inferior, but they are not. They have the same general intellectual capacity as other men, only they do not use this capacity. To be able to do or use something is different from actually doing or using it. Some people have above normal intelligence, but do not utilize it because of laziness and slothfulness. These people would appear to have inferior intellects, when in reality they do not. If the knowledge of gunpowder were given to savages, they would be able to make and use it, which proves their problem is not in their intellect, but in their will. And I add this, and by the way, they would use gunpowder in this case because it's to their benefit in warfare. How many Indians were taught how to mix things and then they go out and start using it? In this case, because they needed it. But they were still lazy and slothful in many other ways. Because of laziness and slothfulness, they choose not to use their intellect when they should. Because God wills for all men to be saved, He gives all sane men the intellectual capacity to know and believe all the things they need to be saved and to live according to that faith, which during the New Covenant era is the Catholic faith. God opens the intellect of all good-willed men so that they will believe what is necessary for their salvation. I quote, For if it shall please the great Lord, He will fill him with the spirit of understanding, end quote, Ecclesiasticus 39:8. And we read from Luke 24:5, God opened their understanding that they might understand the scriptures, end quote. This is more proof that the problem with savages is not in the intellect, but in their will because of their laziness and slothfulness, which can be dispelled by God's grace and their cooperation. Hence, if the gospel were preached to savages, those of good will would, by God's grace, be able to use their intellectual capacity to know, believe, and live by it. God's grace and their cooperation would dispel the obstinacy of their will that causes laziness and slothfulness so that they could apply their intellects in order to know, believe, and do what they must to be saved. The savages that have converted to the Catholic Church and faith are proof of this. Therefore,
this
condemns the heresy that savages do not have the intellectual capacity to know, believe, and live by the gospel of the Catholic faith. Now we go on to read from my book. The fact that many savages have been taken out of the jungle and civilized disproves the heresy that man's intellectual capacity evolves. It is a Catholic dogma that man's intellect and physical features and abilities do not evolve. The evolutionists heretically believe that some races are more primitive because they have not evolved at the same rate as other races. They teach that evolutionary changes can only be noticed after 1,000 or more years. If that were true, then these savages could not have been taken out of the jungle and civilized so quickly, because according to evolutionists, intellectual capacity does not evolve that quickly. And if the evolutionists modify their belief to accommodate the savage who is civilized in his lifetime by teaching that some races under certain circumstances evolve very quickly, even with a year, because that is the time within which a savage could be civilized, then what of the other savages from the same tribe that refuse to be civilized? How is it that they have not evolved within 1 year, but others from the same tribe have? You see, they get trapped everywhere they go, the evolutionists. The difference then cannot be evolution because they would have all evolved at the same rate and thus all became civilized together. The reason then that a savage becomes civilized within his lifetime is not because he evolves, but because he, with the help of God's grace, acquires knowledge and wills to learn and use it. This is the cause and effect that any good-willed man with common sense can see. They're smiting God's grace. They're insulting God's creation, that He didn't create men with the capacity to learn if man wanted to, and God's grace wasn't powerful enough to make him learn. As the true saying goes, it takes more faith to believe in evolution than to believe in the true faith of Catholicism. The difference is that the faith of the evolutionist is a bad faith, a false faith, an abominable faith, and hence, all men can know it is false by the mere use of their reason. Because it is a false faith, human reason can easily detect its falsehoods. Now, I have a footnote here on that. Even though some dogmas cannot be comprehended by reason, dogmas can never contradict reason. And human reason can easily detect the heresy of evolution because its many contradictions and absurdities are against even the natural law. And then God gives grace to every pagan on that. Because it is a false faith, it has no credible witnesses and evidence to support it, or true miracles from God to confirm it. And that was the main condemnation of the intellectual evolutionists. Now we'll go on to the next topic, which says lack of knowledge because of simplicity. That was the first cause we just finished, because of sin. Why are men ignorant? You know, it's because of sin, or it's because of simplicity. We're going to get into that now. A lack of knowledge is not sinful when it is due to simplicity. And if some people are ignorant of the many scientific advances in the world because they like simplicity, then this ignorance is not sinful and can even be beneficial or virtuous. For instance, the farmer who works his land without modern equipment can benefit from not being dependent upon modern equipment and derive a greater satisfaction from his work. While this farmer is scientifically ignorant, he is not lazy and does not live in squalor. Now we go on to the next topic. A man's prosperity does not mean he is intellectually superior or holy. This is like a side note that's important to place in here. An important point needs to be mentioned here, or else one might get the wrong impression. The intellect, a simple lifestyle, or a high-tech lifestyle, is not good or evil in itself. In and of themselves, the intellect, simplicity, and science are good. It is the misuse of these things that is evil. Just because a man lives a simple life and prospers does not mean he is good. For instance, the Amish live a very simple lifestyle and prosper, but in the eyes of God, they are just as evil as the sinfully ignorant savage or high-tech heathens. Why? Because they worship a false god and practice a false religion, and they look upon scientific progress in and of itself as evil when it is not. God is so angry with the Amish that he grants them a false prosperity in their simple lifestyle that makes them think they are good and blessed when they are evil and cursed. Likewise, just because some men are scientifically more advanced than others, and some men are smarter than others, does not mean they are godly. Just because a man runs a good business and seems to have his temporal life in order, does not mean he is godly. All these men can be just as evil as a sinfully ignorant savage. One is a high-tech heathen and the other is a low-tech heathen. And neither have true wisdom because, quote, wisdom will not enter into a malicious soul nor dwell in a body subject to sin, end quote, Wisdom 1:4. God punishes sinful men in many different ways. One he brings low into squalor, and another he brings high into false prosperity, which inflates pride, greed, covetousness, and materialism. Quote, pride goeth before the destruction, and the spirit is lifted up before the fall. Proverbs 16:18. If temporal prosperity were a sure mark of true wisdom and holiness, Jesus would never have said, quote, for what shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and suffer the loss of his soul? Mark 8:36. The same applies to nations. For what shall it profit a nation to prosper and gain dominance over the entire world and suffer the loss of its soul? History proves that many nations that gained dominance over the world were eventually punished and destroyed by God. Prosperous men who lost their souls and prosperous nations that were destroyed proved that their prosperity was false, and hence inflated their pride and gave them a false confidence that they were good when in fact they were very evil. The United States of America is a nation of high-tech, prosperous heathens who are just as evil as the ignorant, unprosperous savages. The United States commits worse sins against the faith and morals than the savages. One difference is that God punishes the USA not with squalor, but with the worst curse of all, false prosperity. The curse of false prosperity is worse than the curse of squalor, because false prosperity gives men a false confidence that they are good and blessed when in reality they are evil and cursed. Their painless life of pleasure and luxury leads them to justify their great evils and to forget the fear of God, death, and judgment. When greatly persecuted by the enemies of God, King David is tempted by the prosperity of the wicked, and asks God why he allows the wicked to prosper. And David receives his answer when he enters the sanctuary of God. Quote, from the Psalms. We're quoting from King David here. But my feet were almost moved. My steps had well nigh slipped, because I had a zeal on occasion of the wicked, seeing the prosperity of sinners. For there is no regard to their death, nor is there strength in their stripes. They are not in the labor of men, neither shall they be scourged like other men. He says they look strong, they're prosperous, they're not sick. They have great much food, they're eating well. Everything seems to be going good to them. King David goes on to say, Therefore, pride have held them fast, and they are covered with their iniquity and their wickedness. Their iniquity had come forth, as it were, from fatness. They have passed into the affection of the heart. Usually when people are generally fat, most people are fat in society, it means they're lazy, luxurious, they have all the pleasures, they're very prosperous. You can't have many fat people unless they have a lot of food that they're shoving down their throats. And because of their fatness, when you're looking at that, our Lord says, slay the fat ones among them. And because they're not in pain, they're not in misery, you know. And who doesn't know that the United States Americans grow fat people? You can come over skinny from another nation and be here for one generation, you won't get fat, for the most part. But anyway, it says, the commentary then says, fatness, abundance, and temporal prosperity, which have encouraged them in their iniquity and made them give themselves up to irregular affections. That's all a sign of lust, too. King David goes on to say, they have thought and spoken wickedness. They have spoken iniquity on high. They have set their mouth against heaven, and their tongue hath passed through the earth. God created homos, they now say in the United States. Homos can get married. Women are allowed to rule their husbands. Feminism is not a sin. They go out and you're allowed to worship whatever God you want. It doesn't matter. Everybody worships the God in their own way. Religious indifferentism and religious liberty, which they teach men have the right from God to worship whatever God they want. The United States has every type of false God under the sun going on in here. And the state refuses to take sides on any issue, as if God is schizophrenic or there's multiple gods in heaven. All these sins they commit, and King David's looking at the United States, he'd be looking at saying the same thing what you were saying. Lord, how come you let these blasphemers prosper? These people that are committing adultery now. All the Protestants, all these people that support second marriage is through adultery. They're using contraception so they can't have kids. They're causing abortion and murdering kids in the womb. Look at all these sins of evolution, all these horrible sins that are taking place in the public domain right now. The way the people are living, pornography all over the place. Oh, but they're prospering. They're fat and happy. This is who David's talking about. And he's saying, King David's saying, they have thought and spoken wickedness. They have spoken iniquity on high. They have set their mouth against heaven, and their tongue hath passed through the earth. Behold, these are sinners, and yet abounding in the world, they have obtained riches. And I said, then have I in vain justified my heart and washed my hands among the innocent? And I have been scourged all the day, and my chastisements have been in the mornings. Okay, and he's saying, why did I suffer myself, and why am I depriving myself and suffering and carrying the cross? If these guys are prospering, I'm not. And David's being a little bit tempted to just question God, why is this way that you allowed us to? And so he's questioning this. And then he goes on to say, if I said I will speak thus, behold, I should condemn the generation of thy children. He says, but I cannot think that way. Because all your chosen people, God, when you called Abraham out of Ur of Chaldees, were pilgrims on earth, had to suffer, had to be persecuted by the worldly people and the Egyptians and Babylonians. So he's saying, but I know this isn't true, because Jeremiah and all the faithful prophets, all the people in the past, Jeremiah came after David, not before, but David knew about all the faithful men, Samuel came before him, that suffered persecutions. And said, if I start thinking this way, or Moses, I'm going to start condemning all our fathers. Moses, who suffered so much trials, and when they had to go through the desert and live in the desert for 40 years. So he knew that it wasn't, he wasn't really seen. He says, I know that you want us to live this way, but he's sort of just questioning a little bit here. And this is my commentary on that part you just read. King David's temptation to envy the prosperous wicked man is restrained when he considers the just men of the past who suffered greatly at the hands of prosperous wicked men. If David succumbed to the temptation and believed that the prosperous wicked men were just, then he would condemn the poor just men, such as Jeremiah, who suffered greatly at the hands of the wicked prosperous men. Nevertheless, David wonders why God so often allows this to happen. And God gives David the answer. We read in the next same psalm as David goes on. David says, I study that I might know this thing, and it is a labor in my sight, until I go into the sanctuary of God and understand concerning their last ends, which he means is hell. But indeed for deceits thou hast put it to them. When they were lifted up, thou hast cast them down. How are they brought to desolation? They have suddenly ceased to be. They have perished by reason of their iniquity, as a dream of them that awake, O Lord. So in thy city thou shalt bring their image to nothing. Look at the Roman, pagan Roman Empire, the greatest empire in the world. Alexander the Great and the Greeks when he controlled the world. Where is he today? They are all destroyed. And not only that, David says, I go into the sanctuary and I say, well, wait a second, we're all going to die anyway. And what's more important is the hereafter, which is hell. Hell awaits these people. That's where God's justice is found. And even on earth, he will destroy. The United States is just like the pagan Roman Empire, spread out through all the world, bringing the beast to power through supporting the apostate state of Israel. Who can deny it? She's going to fall just as hard as pagan Rome did. It's going to happen. So God gets his due when you don't escape his hands. And this false prosperity is the worst curse because it's allowing all these people to die thinking they're blessed and they go straight to hell. So David contemplates this and he says, ah, Lord, I see. Thou art just and all thy ways are right. And you've taken us out of this world so we don't become addicted to it, to us, and kept us as pilgrims to always keep in mind that our true home is in heaven in the world to come and not this world. The commentary goes on to say in that verse I just read, thou hast put it to them in punishment of their deceits, or for deceiving them, that thou hast brought evils upon them in their last end, while in their prosperity they never apprehended it. Do the rich think that their prosperity may be an effect of God's indignation? End quote. And not because they're being blessed. What does he say in Matthew 27 or 34, the verse about the Son of Man, when the Son of Man comes, it'll be like in the days of Noah. They're going to be eating, drinking, marrying, and giving in marriage up until the day in which Noah entered the ark, and they all knew not, but the flood came and took them all away. So shall the coming of the Son of Man be. He says, he's given a description of people that are frolicking in prosperity and drinking and eating, having marriages and all that, and boom, it's the end of the world, and they go to hell. You see? The biggest evil of capitalism and materialism is that man is judged to be successful if he's prosperous in this world. How many houses and mansions he has, how much money he has. And his reputation is judged accordingly. How well he feeds his children, how many nice cars he has and vacations he takes him on. This they judge as success. But our Lord said that's the most dangerous form of lifestyle in this world because it can easily lend you to become secure in this world and forget about the world hereafter. How contrary is the Americanism, this materialism, this capitalism is to the Word of God? And surely as the God is the true God, this United States is going to fall hard just like all the other pagan empires. And we look here and we go on to read. We see then that false prosperity is an operation of error that God sends to obstinately wicked men and nations who do not believe the truth after it has been presented to them so many times. And this propels them headlong toward hell. Quote, because they received not the love of the truth that they might be saved, therefore God shall send them the operation of error to believe lying, that all may be judged who have not believed the truth, but have consented to iniquity. End quote. 2 Thessalonians 2:10-11. And we read the commentary on that verse. God shall send, that is, God shall suffer them to be deceived by lying wonders. I put in here false prosperity and false miracles. That's in here. In punishment of their not entertaining the love of the truth, end quote. God does not suffer good-willed men to undergo the operation of error. If God sees goodwill in a sinner, he chastises him and brings him low in order to effect his repentance and conversion. Quote, for whom the Lord loveth, he chastises, and he scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. But if you be without chastisement, then you are bastards and not sons. End quote. Hebrews 12:6-8. Better to be punished and brought low in this world than in the next when it is too late. Jesus teaches that the greedy rich man mentioned in the Gospel of St. Luke was under this operation of error. This rich man was a bastard because instead of scourging him, God cursed him with false prosperity since he received not the love of the truth. His prosperity caused him to think he was good and blessed when he was evil and cursed, whereas the poor man Lazarus, who to the carnal man seemed to be evil and cursed because of his poverty and suffering, was actually good and blessed. They both got their just reward when they died. The greedy rich man was buried in hell to suffer for all eternity, and Lazarus went to Abraham's bosom and then to heaven for all eternity to enjoy everlasting peace, health, joy, and happiness. And we quote from that account in Luke 16, verses 19 to 25. There was a certain rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and feasted sumptuously every day. And there was a certain beggar named Lazarus who lay at his gate full of sores, desiring to be filled with the crumbs that fell from the rich man's table. And no one did give him. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. Dogs are better than people, see? They came over. God had the dogs help him. And it came to pass that the beggar died and was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom. And the rich man also died, and he was buried in hell. And lifting up his eyes when he was in torments, he saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. And he cried out and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me and send Lazarus, that he may dip the tip of his finger in water to cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. And Abraham said to him, Son, remember that thou didst receive good things in thy lifetime, and likewise Lazarus evil things, but now he is comforted, and thou art tormented. End quote. The prophet Jeremiah knew that the end of all wicked men, no matter how prosperous they are or holy they seem, is eternal hell. Yet Jeremiah petitions God for the sake of the elect to not prosper the wicked, who honoreth God with their lips, but deny him in their hearts. Instead, he asks God to slaughter them. We read from Jeremiah chapter 12, verse 1 to 3. Thou indeed, O Lord, art just. If I plead with thee, but yet I will speak what is just to thee. Why doth the way of the wicked prosper? Why is it well with all them that transgress and do wickedly? Thou hast planted them, and they have taken root. They prosper and bring forth fruit. Thou art near in their mouth and far from their reins. In the New Covenant era, Jeremiah's plea to God applies to wicked so-called Catholics who profess to be Catholic, but in their hearts, in reality, are non-Catholic apostates and heretics. Jeremiah asked God to put an end to their false prosperity and false piety by slaughtering them for the glory of God and the sake of the elect. That is, ultimately, good-willed men who are Catholic or will become Catholic. No matter how holy so-called Catholic bishops, priests, and laymen may seem because of their prosperity, fame, and outward piety, they are nevertheless very wicked non-Catholic apostates and heretics who will be buried in hell when they die if they do not abjure their heresies and thus enter the Catholic Church and die as good Catholics. I warn you, be not fooled by your false prosperity and piety that make you think you are good because God has not speedily punished you in this world. For God surely will punish you in the next by burying you in hell for all eternity. I quote from Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verses 10 to 11. I saw the wicked buried, who also, when they were yet living, were in the holy place, and were praised in the city as men of just works. But this also is vanity, for because sentence is not speedily pronounced against the evil, the children of men commit evils without fear, buried in hell. And he says they were in the holy place at one time, and now here they are buried in hell. Before it is too late, fear God and take no heed to your prosperity and fame in this world. Examine your conscience in light of all the Ten Commandments and the full deposit of the Catholic faith. Let them be your guide, not your prosperity, your fame, or your own conscience. If you commit just one mortal sin against the faith or morals, you are on the road to hell, no matter how many people tell you how good and blessed you are. Not to be deceived by false prosperity in this evil world, as was the greedy rich man. Even if their prosperity is good and blessed, to be mindful always of their true goal in life, which is to attain eternal salvation in their true home in heaven and the paradise to come. So even prosperity is not always a sin. God does bless even his children, good people, with prosperity and good things. But even in that case, he's saying, because it's not always a curse, that you just better make sure and see in your conscience, is it because of good or curse? Even then, you got to be careful and on guard. And unless you keep your mind focused on who is the true God, and if you don't know who he is, I'm telling you who he is. He's the Catholic God. That's the only true God, the God of the true Catholic Church. Unless you know him, believe in him, adore him, worship him, and obey all his commandments, everything on this earth is worthless and only an illusion. In short, even a man with prosperity must keep his eyes on that utmost and foremost, so that if his prosperity is going to cause him to deny the faith because he needs to take the mark of the beast to eat or to have a house, or he has to deny God and deny the faith. He'd rather die and have life hereafter than have a short prosperity on earth and go to hell when he dies. Now, we go on to read here, "Hence, even if your prosperity is good and blessed, you must not place your trust in it or place it above your true goal, which is eternal life in heaven and the paradise to come." We quote, "Blessed is the rich man that is found without blemish, and that hath not gone after gold, nor put his trust in money, nor in treasures." Ecclesiastes 31:8. It's the love of money that's evil, lusting after it, not money in and of itself. "A rich man must be willing to renounce all his riches, if he must, in order to keep the Catholic faith and live a moral life." This is what Jesus means when he says, quote, "Every one of you that doth not renounce all that he possesses cannot be my disciple." Luke 14:33. Jesus does not mean you must literally give away all that you have, but that you must be willing to do so, if you must, in order to save your soul. "Therefore, the rich man who is just always has a spirit of poverty. He must always expect that poverty can come upon him and be willing to accept it with joy. Jesus, son of Sirach, wisely teaches that the rich man would do well to, quote, remember poverty in the time of abundance, and the necessities of poverty in the day of riches. Ecclesiasticus 15:25. And again, he says, "He that is glorified in wealth, let him fear poverty." Ecclesiasticus 10:31. And again, he says, "In all thy works, remember thy last end, heaven or hell, and thou shalt never sin." End quote. Ecclesiasticus 7:40. Knowing the temptations that come with great riches or extreme poverty, King Solomon petitions God to, quote, "Give me neither beggary nor riches. Give me only the necessaries of life. Lest perhaps being filled, I should be tempted to deny and say, who is the Lord? Or being compelled by poverty, I should steal and forswear the name of my God." End quote. Proverbs 38-9. Intellect does not evolve. Only God alters intellectual capacity. Only God can decrease or increase man's intellectual capacity. And God can do this in an instant. In an instant, God created Adam and Eve and gave them a very great intellectual capacity. However, the instant Adam and Eve committed the original sin, God greatly decreased their intellectual capacity. Their ability to retain and understand knowledge became greatly impaired. To humble King Nebuchadnezzar, God instantly decreased his intellectual capacity to that of an animal, and then instantly restored it after a period of time. We read from the book of Daniel, chapter 4, verses 28 to 34. "A voice came down from heaven to thee, O King Nebuchadnezzar. It is said, thy kingdom shall pass from thee, and they shall cast thee out from among men, and thy dwelling shall be with cattle and with wild beasts. Thou shalt eat grass like an ox, and 7 times shall pass over thee, till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and give it to whomsoever he will." That's the same hour the word was fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar, the same hour. And he did it because Nebuchadnezzar started to think, was trying to think he was God himself and set up those idols. And he says, "Who are you to think you're God? You're nothing more than an axe in my hand that I'm wielding. And because you got so arrogant, I'm going to bring this curse upon you." So he cursed him and made him dumb as a beast within 1 hour. It says the same hour the word was fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar. "And he was driven away from among men, and he did eat grass like an ox. And his body was wet with dew of heaven, till his hairs grew like the feathers of eagles, and his nails like birds' claws. Now at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up my eyes to heaven, and my sense was restored to me." Back again. "And I blessed the Most High, and I praised and glorified him that liveth forever. For his power is an everlasting power, and his kingdom is to all generations. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing before him. For he doth according to his will, as well with the powers of heaven as among the inhabitants of the earth. And there is none that can resist his hand and say to him, why hast thou done it? At the same time my sense returned to me, and I came to the honor and glory of my kingdom, and my shape returned to me, and my nobles and my magistrates sought for me, and I was restored to my kingdom, and great majesty was added to me. Therefore I, Nebuchadnezzar, do now praise and magnify and glorify the King of heaven, because all his works are true, and his ways judgments, and them that walk in pride he is able to abase, end quote. And he converted, by the way, Nebuchadnezzar. This is part of his, you're hearing it. He did convert. Now, what happened? I'm going to go on to read in a minute, but what happened to Nebuchadnezzar here? He went from 1 minute to a high-tech heathen, very smart, very intelligent, very orderly, to a low-tech heathen, like the savages in Africa, both evil states. And then in an instant, he was raised right back up again and given his intellect back. So this proves intellectual capacity does not evolve. God can give it to you, he can take it away, he can give it back to you. It all depends on your sinful nature is why you lose it. Why did Nebuchadnezzar lose it? Because he used his intellectual capacity to do evil. And in this case, God used it to punish him for his great good because he wanted to convert him. God always had his eye on Nebuchadnezzar to convert him before he died, and he did. This was one king that was not like Pharaoh. He was obstinate a couple of times if you read it, but he ultimately, God finally got through to him. We go on to read now after that quote. God greatly increases the intellectual capacity of all men who enter heaven. St. Paul speaks of how man's intellect has been decreased since the fall of Adam and Eve, so that men can only know and understand certain things in part. But when a man enters heaven, God increases his intellect so that he can know and understand these things that he could not know and understand before he entered heaven. We read from 1 Corinthians 13:12. We see now through a glass in a dark manner, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know even as I am known, end quote. Hence God, and not evolution, changes man's intellectual capacity. God also gives the devil the permission and the power to decrease or increase man's intellectual capacity. When a man increases greatly in knowledge and understanding from one day to the next, well, without having to learn, such as being able to understand and speak languages foreign to him, this is a sure sign that his intellectual capacity, his IQ, has been increased, and also that he has been infused with knowledge. If the increase of his intellectual capacity is a gift from God, then it is a blessing, and thus will be accompanied with true wisdom and good fruit. When Blessed Margaret of Castello became a Montanella, a member of the Third Order of Penance of St. Dominic, the blind Margaret knew about a dozen psalms by heart. The next morning, she knew all 150 psalms by heart, and she said the knowledge simply came to her. And that's the good case. However, if the devil, with God's permission, procures an increased intellectual capacity for a man, then this is a curse, and thus will be accompanied with false wisdom and bad fruit. So there we see there's two types of things happening there when your knowledge increases greatly. It's either from God or the devil. If it's from God, it's going to be true wisdom, because even though you have an intellectual capacity that's great and you can know many things, that's not true wisdom. So you have to judge the outcome of this as to what is the faith of that person and how are they living and what is the fruits being produced from that increased intellectual capacity. Because evidently God can right now, if he wants, just open up my intellect, I can start speaking all the languages in the world and know them if I want. It's different than the miracle that took place with the apostles when they spoke in their own language. That would be like me speaking English right now and somebody in Germany is listening to this and it sounds German to them. That's something different. That's another miracle of God. That could happen with the devil too, but I want to get into that also. But what we're talking about is I can actually understand German. I can speak it and write it and all that. God can do that if he wants. But most times God requires you to put out an effort, and then he does give you the grace to learn. Because even if God doesn't give you the grace to learn, you can never learn, even in the normal manner in which God ordains man should learn. So there, we have finished that part. Let that be a lesson to you intellectual evolutionist bastard heretics, that you guys are a bunch of liars and deceivers. Man doesn't evolve. His intellect does not evolve. Created man, God created man as you see him today. He created all the animals as you see them today, and they multiplied. They did not evolve. Man's intellectual capacity, general intellectual capacity, is exactly the same as it was when Adam and Eve fell from the Garden of Eden in their darkened nature, as it is in all men today. All right? And then, because if you go on and read in my book there, I then go on to talk about how they took this heresy and moved it into dogmas, because it would naturally follow if that past men were not as intellectually capable as modern men and didn't have the wisdom they had, they couldn't understand the truths back then as modern man does. So dogmas evolve, and that gets them into denying the eternal dogmas of God. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Amen.
This recording is produced by Mary's Little Remnant, 302 East Joffrey Street, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, 87901. 1-800-273-2878. Visit our St. John the Baptist website at www.johnthebaptist.us or email me, Richard Joseph Michael Ibrani, at rjmi@johnthebaptist.us, or send for a catalog to the just mentioned address.